Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Nani Coloretti, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Management. Also joining us from IBM is Roxanne Ulrich. So, Nani, in response to the need for financial reform, you mentioned it earlier, Congress passed the Dodd-Frank Act, and you also noted that Treasury, because of the passage of this law, received new responsibilities and duties. I'd like for you to tell us a little bit more about that, sure. Those new responsibilities and duties. Could you tell us about some of the challenges of setting up some of the offices that are related to this, and what's the status to date?
I'll start with the office that I was that I helped stand up, which is no longer part of Treasury, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So I left Treasury for about 9 months to help set that office up, and that was just a really interesting federal learning for me. We were merging staff from six bureaus into that now bureau or standalone agency, and we were also sort of starting something from scratch. Mm-hmm. And so I used to make this joke that I went from, you know, one of the oldest agencies in the federal government to the newest, you know, where, I mean, we had like 10 employees, you know, and they were like, you know, we need an IT system, we need an HR system, we need a building, we need a place to sit. And so you don't think of these things when you're like, let's start a new, right? And you have a year. So, and I didn't stay the full first year. But what I learned about that was, and this isn't to do with reg reform, but really the strength of the federal space. Mm-hmm. So the good thing about the federal government, and one of the interesting things about the senior executive services, you can move around and you can rotate. Mm-hmm. And so when we leaned on our Treasury bureaus for help, they were ready. They had already gone through this in setting up the office that implemented the TARP program, the Office of Financial Service. But there was some sort of muscle movement knowledge out there. And I also leaned on places like the Partnership for Public Service to find out if there were other good people around who could help and, like, quickly help. Like, we needed people to, like, detail over and help us right away. And that's how we did it. We did a lot of the initial work by detailing folks over, and also trying to figure out what is the sort of legal and regulatory framework that we need to work on for which thing. So for, you know, merging six groups, what was the legal and regulatory framework that we needed to look at? We needed to make sure that we were closely aligned to sort of labor and HR issues, and we need to know who knew that knowledge. And then we also actually needed to quickly put in place an HR IT system, which sounds like a really tiny little thing that's not very exciting, but it turns out it's really critical to be able to manage a department. And because you're bringing people in from different payroll systems, you actually, you know, you have to transfer a lot of their data, their file, their everything, you know. So that was actually a massive management project and a massive set of just really interesting challenges. And after coming through that and seeing that the agency sort of spin off and be able to stand on its own with about 600 people at year one marker, and I think they're much higher now, that was just like a really proud moment because I felt like, hey, that can happen. You can actually, you know, build something from scratch and transfer people in, and it can actually be a unified agency. What we didn't want to do was have everybody sort of detailed over from their agency, still umbilical corded back to where they came from, and just slap a new, you know, kind of logo on their card and say, you're now part of CFPB. We wanted it to really be from the ground up an agency that could stand on its own and basically was kind of had its own envelope. And so that was just really, really fascinating. There are several other entities that are smaller than that, but just as important that we've stood up that are inside of the Treasury envelope that are a result of Dodd-Frank. One of them is the Office of Financial Research, and that is still being stood up now. But that is some of the challenges there are both hiring the talent to come work for less money in the federal government on financial, you know, data. And but there, by the way, people are very mission driven. And so we have been able to find really fantastic people that have come to do that and have come for a couple of years now. But the other challenge there is IT. So that's a group that's just going to use a massive amount of data because they're going to do a lot of data analysis. So we've been able to incorporate them into our mobile treasury plan. And that's helped us feel like we have the physical space to build something out that can last. Another group is the FSOC, the Financial Stability Oversight Council. That is a council. The Secretary of the Treasury is the head of the council. It's all the financial regulators. And it's a fairly small staff that supports that council. And actually, all of the regulators are likely to have staffs themselves that kind of staff their principal. to come and do that work. But that's been sort of stood up, and we've been running those meetings. Then there's also FIO, which is insurance. I think it's financial insurance. And they are sort of supposed to be also be have capacity to monitor health insurance and other kinds of insurance products and internationally, be able to kind of link internationally. So that's a new and small staff, probably about 12 people. And then there's an office I mentioned before, which is the Office of Minority and Women Inclusion, the OMWI office, was from Dodd-Frank. And that has been stood up inside of departmental offices to do minority and women inclusion. And so each one of these has its own kind of little stand-up story and sort of how do you bring a new thing into the federal government, again, the largest of which was the CFPB.
I'd like to talk about the Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation, OFIT. I think its aim is to achieve government-wide financial management savings by leveraging new technologies.
Yes.
I'd like to know a little bit more about what they're doing, but more specifically, are there plans to realign the office within the department?
Mm-hmm. Sure. This is a group that Treasury has been working on in partnership with OMB and actually in partnership with the steering committee that consists of CFOs, CIOs, and procurement. So remember how I was telling you about, you know, when you do shared services or you're doing, you know, when we do our ITIRB investment review board, we want people from different disciplines. That's who the steering committee is for OFIT. And so the notion being, you know, are there things that we can incubate or better support in the financial world that can be then sort of piloted and then done government-wide. And so they have a sort of a 12-point plan. I won't go into all of the solutions that they're sort of starting to pilot and incubate, but all of them are in some stage or phase of development. Some of the priorities right now are shared services, which is implementing one of the OMB management memos asking agencies to use a shared service solution for future modernization of core accounting systems. And that is to reduce the risk of failed system implementation and have standardization of data. We're not sort of requiring any one solution. There are actually, I think, three solutions in the federal government to do shared services. And we're asking that people consider that, agencies consider that before they upgrade their accounting systems. A second area, and this is kind of overlapping a little bit with shared services, is benchmarking. And that's actually looking at what it costs across government to do financial management. What's the cost per invoice? What are some of the other metrics and measures for on-time payment? You know, are these solutions procured in a way that is, this, you know, kind of getting you the best price as you benchmark them? And so OFIT is working on that. OFIT's working on that with a bunch of federal agencies. OFIT is also working on a major transparency project for data transparency. And that's going to be really interesting, looking at sort of how our financial data transports itself through each touch point and in, you know, and with procurement as well, right? Mm-hmm. So you have, you know, financial systems or procurement systems, and how can you better tag that information to get better transparency if you really wanted to drill down and see what you're buying and where you're buying it. It is really for both the public and agencies to see, you know, what do we spend money on?
Sure.
And so that's like a major effort that they're doing. And there is some, there's a proposal to realign the office from departmental offices, which I mentioned was headquarters. And we have the fiscal assistant secretary there. It's a fairly small shop. And the fiscal assistant secretary oversees the Bureau of Fiscal Service. It used to be two bureaus, but we merged them. The reason for moving the project over to one of the bureaus instead of keeping it at headquarters is really just for sustainability and to have the work of this agency, of the work of this project, the incubator project, be supported by a bureau that pays all the bills of the federal government. Mm-hmm. So the mission of the Bureau of Fiscal Service and, you know, really the mission of part of the mission of Treasury, the requirement is for Treasury to take a lead role in financial policy and financial management. And so it made sense to put, if I think of the Bureau of Fiscal Service as like the place you go where you are in a pool of CFOs. It's a very, very good place and a strong place to put it.
Well, we know the federal government makes trillions of dollars in payments every year. But unfortunately, there are instances where the government makes payments that are considered improper. So addressing improper payments is a central component, as we know, of the administration's efforts to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse. Could you define what is considered an improper payment and tell us more about Treasury's Do Not Pay Business Center?
Sure, sure. So an improper payment is when funds go to the wrong recipient, or they go to the right person or recipient or vendor, but it's the wrong amount. or the documentation just doesn't exist to support a payment that went out the door, or the recipient uses the funds in an improper manner. So that's kind of what it means to be improper, and it could be an overpayment or an underpayment. You know, it doesn't have to be that we just put too much money out the door. Maybe you didn't put enough money out the door. So individual error rates of agencies are generally low, but the estimate for FY 2012 is about $108 billion of improper payments. The president has been really interested in this, and since 2009 has issued sort of a series of executive orders and memos to agencies to sort of reduce improper payments. One of the efforts has been to build the Do Not Pay Business Center, which Treasury runs, and it basically coordinates with OMB and federal agencies to reduce the number of improper payments. They have a lot of really interesting efforts. There are several sort of lists of do not pay. There's a death master file, so if someone is no longer alive, you should not be paying them. There are suspension and debarment files where a vendor, you should not pay them after a certain point, and several of these other files. And so what they're doing is they're making it easier. They're making a kind of a one-stop shop or portal for agencies to verify payees' eligibility before they've been paid, and they've also been able to do it after the payee's been paid in order to sort of chase an overpayment or to pay more if it was an underpayment. And so right now, 21 out of the 24 CFO Act agencies are participating in the Do Not Pay Portal and Do Not Pay Business Center, and there's actually 26 non-CFO agencies and 15 states and the District of Columbia are using the Do Not Pay, and so they're doing batch matching of pay files, continuous monitoring. There's an online query tool, and there are also some data analytics tools that are being rolled out over time that help decide if you are making an improper payment.
As a follow-up, would you tell us more about Treasury's efforts to reduce its overall improper payments and some of the challenges facing the department in this area and how it's addressing them?
Sure. I mean, we are, all of our bureaus are active participants in the Do Not Pay Business Center. And so we were sort of like a first mover in our own initiative, right? Because we're, right. Well, yeah, it's a good move. So, because we're asking everybody else to do it, right? And so we're trying to, you know, show that we can do it ourselves as well. So that has been helpful. And so it's some of our data that's being data matched, and we're trying to move all of the bureaus into a world where they're doing that actually before the payment goes out. So that's sort of part of our effort. We also have efforts to reduce our improper payments in the tax refund area. There's a whole host of efforts in that arena, including identity theft and fraud, and also sort of data analysis that helps understand how you might catch that before it goes out.
So, Nani, we're in the era of fiscal austerity and furloughs, unfortunately, and I want to focus on what you're doing to keep the folks at Treasury focused and motivated in this kind of environment. So how do you do that?
I think the important thing, so this is the interesting thing about working in a time of furloughs and reduced budgets. Mm-hmm. It's actually could be seen as so the worst time to work in the federal government or the best time to work in the federal government. And of course, I am a glass half full person, so I think it's the best time to work here because every single person is important when you're working in a time of you're always important, but if you're not going to be able to backfill anyone who leaves, that makes everyone who's left need to do a little bit more. And so one of the ways that we've been looking at employee motivation is really working with the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey to look at where our weak points are in some of those answers, both at headquarters and across Treasury. And our human capital folks are working with managers and leaders to try to figure out how do we both improve employee engagement and literally directly address some of the issues that we are finding in the Employee Viewpoint Survey. It is a time of diminishing resources, but we are sharing resources to do things like training and leadership investment.
What does the future hold at the U.S. Department of the Treasury? We will ask Nani Coloretti, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Management, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.